This is the Frogcast.
Edition of the Frogcast. We are in a bye week and not getting ready for West Virginia until a little over a week here. So we thought that we would bring on a special guest who would give us a chance to tell us a little bit about TCU football as well as the history as of one of the biggest online forums to discuss the Horned Frogs that we love. We've got Trey Fallon as well as Daniel Southern and myself, Jeff Mitchell, here tonight. And we want to welcome our special guest, Wes Phelan, who is usually in Fort Worth, but is on a work trip in St. Louis and took a little time out of his busy schedule to get online and talk with us tonight. Wes, we want to welcome you to our show tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, thank you. You are one of the main guys on killerfrogs.com. And I will never forget September of 2000, it was, the year of Ladainian Tomlinson's senior year. I went down to the poorhouse in downtown Fort Worth to watch the game. We were playing Nevada, and there was a guy handing out hats in the corner, and it was the hat said killerfrogs.com, and I had never heard of that. So, of course, I took the free TCU paraphernalia and went home that night, and I have wasted more time on this website. I could have four PhDs if you just add up the time that I've spent on this website. So I want to thank you and blame you for that at the same time.
Oh, that's okay. That's lowering productivity is what we're good at.
Yes, you are. If work blocks things like Yahoo and Facebook, as long as they don't block killerfrogs.com, a lot of these guys on here are good to go. Good to go.
Funny story. I actually had a guy, 6 or 7 years ago, email me in a panic, and he said the company had been running a check on websites and to see how much time their employees are spending on the internet. And he said, they've caught me. I need you to delete my account, delete all, and I did. I methodically deleted every record of him. I said, you sure you want me to delete? Yeah. It'll cost me my job. I'll sign back up on later. So I did. I took him off entirely. And I can't even remember who that was. I think he was up in Pittsburgh, but he was worried. He said, I got to get all record of me having been on there off of right now. So
that is hilarious.
So I did that for him.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to get a little background about this largest online community of TCU fans. So tell us a little bit about how in the world this whole thing got started, from the inception to when you got involved to kind of when it all kind of started to take off. What happened to make Killer Frogs happen?
Well, I found out about when I got my first computer, which was an old Apple. Gosh, I don't even remember what it was. It had like 30 megabytes of storage. I mean, it was expensive and large and way underpowered, but I got that and I got online. That was about 1993, I believe, 94, somewhere in that time frame. And I just got on and found, I typed in, I can't remember if Google was a search engine then, but there were any number of them out there. And I typed in TCU football, and this thing called the Frog Fan Forum popped up. And it was owned by a guy named Don Dow, a TCU grad. And he was a web designer and did some web work. And it was actually on his server or on his site. It didn't have its own URL. It was on, I think, golfsouthwest.com/frogfanforum. So I got on there, and, those were kind of the dark days of TCU athletics. Nothing much was going on. And I was kind of tired of having to talk to people at work and saying, you go to TCU and get the Snickers from it, and the usual jibes about you guys ever going to get a football team. So I just created a persona of tired of Frank because that was the athletic director, tired of whoever else was in the way there, the coach, You know, if you'll remember, there was a whole series of names, Tired of Frank slash Mel slash whoever, you know, and Frank was always the constant, but whoever got the third and second and third and fourth position, usually just kind of on a rotating basis. But, and I was a little bit of a hellraiser, I'll admit it, and I was pretty vocal. But it was kind of funny that TCU, first time they'd ever, you know, ever had any kind of public denouncement of the way athletics were going. You know, it was really nothing different than was being discussed at the Paris coffee shop or any cafe around town on a Monday morning after a football game. And but in this case, it was out there for everybody to see, and they didn't much like it. And they, to tell you a little story, they actually assigned the guy in the athletic department, the school, to track down who this tired guy was. And they, I'm not sure if they had one guy dedicated to it or a team, but they started trying to figure out who everybody was. And I saw a spreadsheet, actually, and my name was on it. They had it figured out pretty well. And then a couple other people and a couple of people they weren't anywhere close on. But they spent a lot of time trying to figure out who this guy was.
That's more than we had on recruiting in the early 90s.
And the funny thing was, after they figured it out, the old SID, a guy named Glenn Stone, had a pretty good sense of humor. And one day at Christmas, I got this Christmas card or this envelope delivered to me and addressed to Tired of Frank. And I said, uh-oh, I've been caught. I've been busted. So, and I opened it up, and it was the athletic department Christmas card. And it was signed by Frank Windegger, and, you know, it was all machine signed, so I didn't personally sign it. But, you know, it was signed by some notables in the athletic department. So I figured, oh, they found me. So anyway, fast forward that a little bit. And then Don Dowell had decided he kind of needed to get out of the Frog Fan Forum business. And I said, well, can I pick it up? So he said, sure. So I, having always been a fan of Jim Killingsworth, our old basketball coach, and if you remember when the team was in his first or second year and they made a run at the Southwest Conference Championship, the team was called Killers Frogs, okay? And they just his nickname was just a shortened version of his last name, which it was Killer. And from that, it morphed into Killer Frogs. And I'd always had the greatest respect for Jim Killingsworth and really liked him, thought he was a real gentleman. So when I decided to take over when Don decided to give up the Frog Fan Forum, I asked him if I could do it. Killer Frogs are the natural to me. So I grabbed the name and the URL and registered it and started the site up. I had a few people in there with me. We had a webmaster, and those are back in the days of the old HTML coding, and everything had to be hard-coded, and I knew none of that. I knew how to type a protest in a box, you know, and post it, but I didn't know how to do any of the behind-the-scenes work on it. So we had a guy named Terry Brockhausen, who was our webmaster. Terry was an interesting story about him. He was a PhD in history, but he taught as an adjunct professor at TCU in the computer department, and very, very brilliant guy. And he did a good job of keeping us online and keeping everything up to, you know, up to snuff. And anyway, we just kind of kept growing and growing. Our first month we had, I looked at our stats and I saw, my gosh, we just did 450,000 page views in a month. Holy smokes. How can we ever beat that? You know, well, you know, we do 4.5 million page views in a month, and I'm thinking we haven't reached our peak yet. So anyway, so we started, it went on, and then we sold the site right back in 2000. Well, it was right around the time my son died in 2006, and he, to Scott Nix, and then a few months after that, he recognized that I was kind of floundering around. I needed something to get my mind off the events of my son and everything. So he brought me back in. And, you know, Scott and I have been doing it ever since. And it's been a great partnership. And he's a wonderful person to have as a partner and works hard. And then, you know, we're trying to take it to bigger and better things and do more all the time. And, you know, as you know, we do our streaming TV show every Wednesday night. In fact, they just wrapped up tonight's show a few minutes ago. They had Brandon Finnegan and Jim Schlossnagel on. So that's been kind of that's a rough overview of the site and how we got where we are today. And, you know, it's been a great ride and looking forward to an even better one.
That's great. That's great.
Wes, you mentioned, you know, the dark days of TCU athletics and TCU football and, you know, when you first took over the website and how it's grown to, you know, 4 million hits in a month. And I know you're a loyal, diehard TCU fan like we all are, but did you ever, like, expect it to get to this point, like, back in the Big 12, you know, contending for a national title? Like, in your wildest dreams, did you ever see this coming?
Well, I was always hopeful, but no, I never, you know, I remember the days when I said, gosh, if we could just go 500, we could win six and lose six, I'd be such a happy guy. You know, and then we started doing that. Then we went eight, then we went nine and 10 and 12 and you know, go to the Rose Bowl. And now we're potentially in the running for the national championship. I mean, that remains to be seen. But, you know, I never saw it. I mean, I remember the dark day sitting there at Amon Carter Stadium watching Texas destroy us 81-16. Or, A&M kill us, you know, with Jackie Sherrill was a coach and they're up 50 points and they're doing an onside kick, you know, to run up the score even more. I remember those things. And a lot of our younger fans today don't, you know, all they know is the winning that we've had the past 20 years. They don't know those dark days. I mean, I remember being down at Baylor in 1972, I think it is, and our first year coach, Jim Pittman, in that game, he had a heart attack and died on the sideline right before the half. And so, I mean, I was there at that game, and it was absolutely bizarre because nobody was cheering or clapping. They announced it right after half that he died. And, you know, it was a very silent game, and everybody kind of knew it was bad. But, you know, we didn't, you know, nobody's aware of it until they announced it. But, you know, it was a bizarre game. And I remember those days. And, you know, thankfully, we haven't had anything like that, and hopefully never will. But there were some pretty dark days back there. And, you know, dark days in that the TCU didn't give they gave lip service support, I'll call it that, to athletics, but they didn't really give any monetary support. The facilities were just horrendous. And it wasn't until we got left out of the Big 12 and you know, they kind of woke up and said, okay, we do have something we can do here. We can make this place better. And thankfully they did. And in retrospect, I think getting left out of the Big 12 was the best thing that ever happened to us because it caused the administration and some of the powers to be there, let's call them the money people, to actually put their heads together and say, what can we do? We don't want you either got to get with the program or get off of it. And so they decided to make some changes and put some money into it. And, you know, the rest is history. So I think had we gone to the Big 12 in place of Baylor, I think we would have done like Baylor did. We would have languished at the bottom of it for I don't know how long. And then finally, you know, they hit, I hate to say it, but they hit a good combination with their current coach. And he's done a good job there. But, yeah, you know how they struggled. You know, they were a joke. Prior to that, and then on the flip side, starting with Franchione, we went to the bowl games and started earning our way back into the big time, and we've done it now, and so I don't think we're going to slide backwards.
Yeah, I was a senior in '97 when we beat SMU to go 1-10, and we ripped the goalpost down. Like that was the climactic moment of the '97 season.
I remember that, and I think I know why we beat them. You know, it wasn't that the coach had such a brilliant strategy. It's that they had a new coach that year, a guy named Mike Cavan. And one thing that I found out when Franchione came, you know, if you'll remember, the Pat Sullivan was a coach, and he had that – wasn't a horizontal passing game. It was a vertical passing game. And so he would it was a horizontal pass. He'd always throw out in the flat or behind the line of the scrimmage and try and set something up to a running back or a slot back. And but what I didn't know until Francione told us was that they didn't have an audible system. You know, he called the play from the sideline, and that's what they had to run. And so, you know, that's why we kept getting stopped time and time again when we go up the line of scrimmage trying to run a play. And Mike Cavan, I don't think, was aware of that. So we actually were able to catch him by surprise a little bit. Yeah, and so we were stunned that he didn't have any audible system whatsoever. And Francione said after you figure that out, it was easy pickings. I mean, yeah. It's like fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's my theory on why we beat SMU that year. I'm probably wrong, but, you know, it's as good a theory as any of them, I guess. So.
You know, you talk about the – like Trey referenced, did anybody think this is where we'd be at? I'm in suburban Chicago, which is where I live, and I officiate high school football on Friday nights. This is just one of the things I do to stay connected to the game. Wow. I'm doing a game on the North Suburbs on Friday night. I didn't get to tell either of you guys this yet either, I don't think. Their defense, when they want to send the house and light somebody up, their signal for that is TCU, TCU, TCU.
Really?
These kids in North Chicago... The easiest translation for them to understand of when we crush the quarterback physically is to shout out TCU.
Wow.
I mean, can you imagine 20 years ago, some kid that's 1,400 miles away from TCU, knowing what it was, let alone thinking, this is the hardest nose play that I can participate in. And that just floored me. Like, at the quarter, I just asked them, why are you guys shouting TCU? They're like, oh, that's when we send the house, and that's our way to make sure we got to light up the guy with the ball. And I'm like,
well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it is really cool. I'm like, holy shit. Yeah.
And, you know, that's I'm with you. 20 years ago, nobody would have used TCU with a blitz or send the house or anything. I mean, it was, you know.
And up there, they probably wouldn't even know who TCU was.
No,
absolutely. But now, you know, we're kind of a household name.
Oh, yeah. I was sitting at a park down here in suburban Chicago the other day with my TCU hoodie on. I had two people stop me to reference it.
Really?
Yeah. One of them was like, oh, that Tech game was crazy. And another guy said, man, I can't believe it. You know, they're undefeated with all those injuries. And I'm like, all these Big Ten fans are following and clearly following closely this, you know, small private school in Fort Worth that 30 years ago was just an absolute joke in college athletics. So, you know, you've had a front seat to it all here for the last, you know, from 72, I mean, from the year you referenced when the coach unfortunately died on the sidelines at Baylor. If you could put your finger on two things, you know, your reference being left out of the Big 12, but like what are two defining moments of the last 20 years that have helped elevate us maybe like out of the basement and then up to the top where we are now? What do you see, Wes, of the last 20 years that are a couple pivotal moments? Maybe some things that people might not even think about off the top of their head.
Well, I mean, the first two obvious things are, A, hiring Dennis Francione, which was a brilliant hire. And then the second thing to that is, you know, promoting Gary Patterson to the defensive coordinator when Francione left. I'm sorry, to head coach when Francione left to go to Alabama. And that took a little bit of guts. To promote an assistant like that. And Francione, from what I've heard from people that were on the inside, had done his best to convince them that he wasn't ready to be a head coach. Now, that part of that may have been selfish because he probably wanted Gary to go with him to Alabama. But, you know, Gary, there's nothing wrong with his football mind. At the early going, he was not a good communicator. You know, he had a lot of growing up to do in that regard. He's done it pretty well. But those are two of the most those are two moments that I think really helped turn it around. But at the same time, you had to have an athletic director who had some vision and some drive and a plan and a program that he could put in place. And that was Eric Hyman. And Eric came in and, you know, officially his first hire was Dennis Francione. But, you know, he came in there to basically right the ship, and he had a lot of work done. I remember talking to him kind of off the record 6 or 8 months after he'd been there. And he, you know, he was working 14, 16 hour days. And he said there was absolutely no policies or procedures. You know, it was just kind of the program had run by the seat of its pants for X number of years. And, you know, it always been done because that's the way it always, everybody had always done it. So everybody, I don't blame Frank Windegger. It's just the way it, people that preceded him had always done it. So he just kind of filled in where the other guy had left off. And Hyman, you know, very organized person, very methodical, always has a plan and always tries to execute his plan. And so I think that was pivotal. I think some of the vision that some of the alumni, like Malcolm Loudon, who else, Wittenbreaker, some of those, the Coxes out in Midland, some of those guys that had some vision and drive and a desire to really push this program up. And they, you know, I give them all the credit. Malcolm Loudon was the head of the athletic committee, and he was instrumental in pushing everything in the right direction and making sure we made good, smart hires. And, you know, I give them just as much credit behind the scenes as Dennis Franchione or Patterson got it out in public view. So in my way of thinking, those guys did it. It was a team effort, and they all worked together and got it done.
Wes, just, you know, college football fans are some of the most passionate of any sport. So I guess my question to you is, how hard is it, I guess, to run a message board like that where the fans are just, I mean, you can read Killer Frogs. I mean, some people are a lot more vocal and outspoken than others. Some are, you know, trolling. Some are just there for laughs and, you know, to mess around. Like, how hard is it to kind of control all of that chaos, especially, you know, when things happen, like, you know, to bring up like the drug bust in a few years ago, or like even when TCU loses a game, like, is it hard? Do you love it? Like, tell me, well, a little bit about that aspect.
You know, we have the hardest thing is to keep people. One thing I try and do, and that we've actually gotten pats on the back from the athletic department about, is that we try and take any kind of negative comments, personalized comments about the players. You know, it's okay to say somebody like, let's just say Casey Paha, for example. It's okay to say he had a bad game, but it's not okay for you to go and say Paha sucks. That's that drug sniffing son of a gun shouldn't even be on the team. I don't want that, you know. And what brought that about is we do try and protect the players on that. They are kids after all, and you know, we do try and protect the athletes. And what brought that to mind for me were a couple of instances. If you remember back to the days when Billy Tubbs was coach, he had a basketball player named Rebel Polk that was on the team. Rebel was 6'10", great size, good kid. Had pretty good skills, but he wasn't built for the fast-paced offense that Billy Tubbs liked to run. And as a result, he didn't play very often. When he did get in there, he was a little slower and just had trouble keeping up. Well, Rebel's parents were always on there, and I got to be friends with them, and we'd chat, and I'd see him at football games or basketball games. And one day they just – and they get on the Frog Fan Forum all the time. And I asked them one day, I said, "You're not on there anymore." She said, "No, it's just too hard for us to read everybody do all the negative stuff about Rebel and cut him down." And that just, that hit me like a hammer to the head. And I said, "Oh, yeah, I never even thought about that." Because we do have parents on there. We have grandparents and girlfriends that read about it and follow it. And there's a list of players currently that their parents are on there. I won't name them, but every season we have a number of parents, and I don't want them coming there reading bad things about their son. Like I said, it's fair to say he didn't have a good game. But you know, going in there and making it personal and blasting him and calling him names and doing that, I'm not going to stand for that. So in that respect, that's probably the hardest thing. We get some guys from time to time that, the thrive on being negative. And I don't know how you change that behavior, you know, with all the good positive things going on, but that's just characteristic of them, I guess. You have some guys that love to be internet tough guys, you know, that
they may be 110 pounds soaking wet, you know, and 4 foot nothing, but they're trying to stand up to a guy who's 6 foot five and 260 pounds and convince them how tough they are.
Keyboard courage.
Keyboard courage. You're exactly right. And so we've had that up. I actually, before I knew who Scott Nix was, I was kind of that way. And, you know, if I'd known, if I'd actually called him out and we squared up, I would have gone, oh, God, what have I done? I'm going to get killed here. You know, so, but Scott's a big boy and he played football. And, we get a lot of that. But, you know, it's, you try and deflect it. You try and move them down the line and get them off of it. I try not to be too ban-centric and hammer them too hard. I just try and deflect it and move it on and move the conversation along. And if they get where they're nipping at each other, I do send them a little PM and say, would you guys please take it to email or our PM system and get it off the board here, because it's just, you know, let's keep it talking about football and not your personality problems. So, yeah, moderation's a little bit of a problem sometimes, but not too bad. We've got a good group of moderators, and the first thing we always tell them is to let everybody have fun. You know, don't make yourself too recognizable. Don't force yourself on them. Just kind of stay in the background and move the conversation on in other directions if you can. So that's what we try and do. That's how we try and moderate it. Doesn't always work out that way, but that's kind of our goal.
I remember, I think it was 2001, there was a game, and it was a rough game. I actually think of all places it was at UAB, and Casey Printers had a bad game, and somebody started just trolling him and running him down, and the next post said, I'm Casey's mom, and I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't call my son an X, Y, and Z. Yes, he threw an interception, but you're not going to talk that way about him. And I mean, it's not the same as what you were describing with Rebel Polk's parents, but that just struck me like, yeah. Here I am in graduate school, ready to just badmouth this kid, and there's his mama.
Yeah, and see, people don't realize. Yeah, Casey's mom and his uncle were always on there. I mean, we in the early days we had tailgates, and they'd always come to our tailgates, and we'd talk to him all the time, and I really enjoyed talking to him. But if he did, if he had a bad game, I remember people blasting him and doing that. It wasn't until Rebel Paul came along that I really started trying to change that and get that off the board and move it along and put that policy. And then I also was at a Texas site called Shaggy Bebo one time, and that's when they had a quarterback named Chris Sims, who Phil Sims' son. And Chris had an exceptionally bad game for the Horns, and what those fans were writing about him was just brutal. I mean, absolutely brutal. And I, you know, combine that with what happened to Rebel Polk, and I just said, you know what, I'm not going to have that anymore here on our site. So that's when I put that policy in. And I think in general, most people, you know, appreciate it. I know the mothers and dads do. I know the school does. I mean, they have quietly told me they appreciate that. You know, they try to pretend we're not there sometimes, but they quietly told us they appreciate that. You know, we try and maintain that. But like I tell people, sometimes it's people get in there and get away with it, and we're not on the site 24/7. It's hard to be. So if somebody's doing it at 3 a.m., I rely on other people to tell me it happened so I can take care of it.
Well, Trey or Daniel, you guys got any more questions here for Wes since we got him on the line?
I'm good.
Good. Well, your reward is you get a free case of Keystone.
So, all right. Yay!
That is what we give to every guest as they get all the Keystone they want. So you don't have to square off with me. You just get a free case of Keystone, Keystone Light, either way. You know, thought you'd appreciate that, Wes.
I appreciate that. That's great. Yeah, that's – I don't know if you saw our first show of the season or when we had Chucky Hunter on, but he brought in a case of Keystone for us. So
I did see that. I'm glad that has been diffused into an inside joke among Frog fans.
Well, so, you might as well have some fun with it.
Might as well have some. I got to hand it to the one of the grocery stores out in Lubbock. They had a huge stack of cases of Keystone, and they said prices like this are like a steal. And I was like, that's good college football right there.
Yeah,
that is
awesome.
Good college football joke. Props to
them. Yeah, that was funny. And that was, you know, thankfully that whole situation got rectified. And
yes.
Sua Ua and Andre Pettis Wilson are back on the team. And, you know, we need them both. I mean, you know, the defensive problems we've had with the injuries. But what you don't know is at one point we were down 7 wide receivers on offense. So Pettis Wilson was a special teams player, and he's been taking the field a little bit in some of the offensive plays. So we needed everybody we can get out there. We were pretty strong. You don't see it because Doxson and Lissenby were having such great years, and then Cavante Turpin. But in reality, if you remember, Manuel Porter went down with an injury, and then we had some other guys who were hurt. Devontae Gray was hurt. Yeah.
Shattered his collarbone.
Yeah, and then at one point, Lenina. And then I was kind of stunned to hear the number because some of them were backups, but I remember Meacham overhearing him say that we were down 7 wide receivers at one point. Wow. You know, and in that offense, you need a lot of wide receivers. So it's good to have Pettis Wilson back, and hopefully I don't know if Slonina will be back, but it's good to see Liston be out there again. And he certainly made his presence known against Iowa State, catching 6 catches for 101 yards or something like that, and just to have his speed out there, that's a big thing right there.
We need all the bodies we can get.
And I think we've got some good recruits coming in for next year. I think they got some great receivers and some defensive players that'll be good. I think that kid. He played at Boise for a year. He's at a California JUCO now, but I think his name is Matt Boson or Boyson, and he's from California, and he'll be coming in, and he's defensive end. He kind of looks like Clay Matthews. You know, he's got that long blonde hair, and he's real well-defined with his, arms and chest, and he's cut. I wish I looked like that, but I don't. But I look like somebody put an air bicycle pump in me and started pumping, but he's a defensive end and he's supposed to be pretty darn good. So we'll have good depth there next year. And then I guess McFarland will be back. So, we'll lose, Davion Pearson, but one thing we've had when, he went down, we've had some other guys getting experience, and that's a great thing. So I think the defense will probably be a lot better next year. We just have to suffer through this year and hope these guys learn to figure out a few things and get it going.
Well, that is a great phrase to wrap it up. We're 7-0 and we have to suffer through it this year. That is a paradigm shift for Horned Frog fans, especially those that have been around following the team as long as you have, Wes. Well,
yeah. Well, expectations are great. I like I said, I remember when my highest expectation was a 6-6 season.
Yeah,
and now I'm thinking, boy, if we don't go 9-2 or 10-2 or 11-1, something's wrong.
That's right.
So I'm really excited. It's great to have expectations. It's great to be able to go in and, our corporate offices are up in Chicago. It's great to be able to go up there and not have to take hide and want to talk to people. We've got Michigan and Ohio State people in there, and. I love poking my finger in our Ohio State, the guy, chest of our guy who went to Ohio State. I said, we're coming to get you.
I love it.
Enjoy your title. You got it for 1 year, and then we're going to take it from you. So
that's right. That's right.
Yeah, it's fun. It's great to be back where we are now, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Awesome. Well, Wes, thank you so much for coming on. We want to thank you for two things. One, for being here on our show tonight, and we also want to thank you. You let us post every Monday morning or whenever we go live with a show. You let us put it on killerfrogs.com that we got the show going, and we can't thank you for that enough. We really appreciate you letting us use that huge platform that you have for TCU community to be able to share this podcast that we do every week. It means a lot to us.
And I'll tell you something else. I'll just let you guys have a peek into the future here. We're not sitting still. We've got the show going on. If you've seen the bottom of every page, we're flying the USA Today banner. So we are part of the USA Today network. We're going to be having USA Today content fed to us very quickly. Our biggest challenge right now has been getting, our online store up and running. I'm told it may be up tonight, but probably tomorrow. So once he gets that done, and that's been a bigger chore than we ever imagined it'd be. We teamed up with a local guy in Fort Worth who does embroidering. He got the license. And I thought we'd go online with 25 or 30 items and sell them. Well, he wants 200. So he's, which kind of scares me a little bit, I'll be honest with you. But he's got all the financial risk in it. But we're, to put all together to get a new store that's, you know, takes orders, processes them properly. We've got a new credit card system that will be, you know, and getting all the security licenses. You know, I just kind of thought you could flip a switch and make it happen, and I've learned it doesn't work that way. So we'll have that going, and then as soon as that's done, we'll have a new homepage where we'll be able to feed in all the USA Today content and some content from another partner called Campus Insider. We're going to be pretty content heavy, so we're hopefully going to be a one-stop shop for all the Frog fans. And we've got a few other things up our sleeve that I can't talk about now, but if they pan out, then you know, we're going to be the site will be even better.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, when it's done, we'll be on there wasting time.
There you go. We want you wasting all your time.
That's right.
I don't want you calling me telling me to take your account off because your boss is looking at it. Where you're going.
That's the beauty of being self-employed, Wes.
There you go.
Yeah, it is. I love it.
That's right. Well, we're going to wrap up here, Wes. We appreciate your time, and we will continue to send people to your site every time that we get on here. So,
thank you so much, and I appreciate Jeff and Daniel and Trey. Thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed it, and I really appreciate it. So, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you for Daniel, for Trey, and for Wes. This is Jeff Mitchell. Thank you so much for listening to the Frogcast.
Go Frogs, guys.